Keep up to date with the past on the 100 Years Ago Show with Mark Stein.
No privacy in the grave. Freeze a crowd in the bridal suite. But freeze company at your execution. It's November 1922.
100 years from today.
Your world news update, as we have reported in recent weeks, after years of labor in the Valley of the Kings, the Egyptologist Howard Carter discovered what he believed to be the entrance to the tomb of Tutankhamun, who ruled as pharaoh some 1,300 years before the birth of Christ. His longtime patron, the Earl of Carnarvon, immediately set off from London to Luxor. And now Mr. Carter, Lord Carnarvon, and his lordship's 21-year-old daughter, Lady Evelyn Herbert, have become the first persons in more than 3,000 years to set foot in Tutankhamun's tomb. The trio squeeze their way through the opening into an antechamber filled with gilded furniture and elaborate statuary. Many of the objects bore Tutankhamun's name, leaving little doubt as to where they were standing. Lord Carnarvon, Lady Evelyn, and Mr. Carter pressed on into the burial chamber itself. The latest news is that the sarcophagus containing the late pharaoh's body and sealed upon his death circa 1323 BC has now been opened by Mr. Carter. Meanwhile, and all but unnoticed, in Cairo, the first Prime Minister of the Kingdom of Egypt has been forced to resign. He had presented a proposed constitution to King Fahd, and His Majesty took umbrage regarding the very concept of a constitution as a diminution of his powers. So one pasha will succeed the previous pasha, and nobody cares about today's Egyptian rulers because the world is agog over an Egyptian ruler from 3 millennia ago. There are said to be signs of an incipient global Tutmania. The messy aftermath of the Great War continues following Greece's national humiliation in the war with Turkey. 6 former cabinet officers and army chiefs were tried and convicted of high treason for their part in losing the war. Before news of the verdict had been published, the sentence was carried out. Has there ever been another occasion in European history when 3 prime ministers, Dimitrios Gounaris, Petros Protopapadakis and Nikolaos Stratos, have been shot by firing squad? The British government has broken with Athens over the executions and is said to be concerned about the fate of the former king's brother, Prince Andrew, whose wife, the former Princess Alice, is the daughter of the late first Sea Lord of the British Empire, Prince Louis of Battenberg. The multiple prime ministerial executions also prompted the resignation of a 4th. Soterios Crocidas, prime minister for less than 2 months, he will be succeeded as first minister by Lieutenant General Stylianos Gonatas. Mehmet VI, deposed as Sultan of the Ottoman Empire, fled Constantinople on a British warship, but assumed he would retain his rank and title of Caliph, supreme leader of the Muslim peoples around the world. Turkey's new rulers had different ideas, and so Abdülmecid II has been installed as the new Caliph in a rather pared-down ceremony. The name of Gallipoli will linger long in the annals of the British Empire because of the hard-fought campaign for the peninsula during the late war. But Great Britain has now returned that vital peninsula to Turkish control. The Conference of Lausanne has opened in Switzerland under the chairmanship of the British Foreign Secretary, the Marquis Curzon, in order to establish a border between Turkey and Greece in Asia Minor. The first day did not go well. In his first significant intervention on the world stage, Italy's new Prime Minister, Benito Mussolini, has angered both Lord Curzon and Monsieur Poincaré of France by announcing that Italy supports the Turkish demand for full participation in the conference by Bolshevik Russia.
verso l'apparire, fiori farangio da si fiere, franzi osare non servire, fiori al fine l'ideale, per cui tanto combattendo, frato l'alfa nazionale, italiana ci la salvezza della nostra libertà.
Speaking of the charismatic Italian leader, and who isn't these days? The Chamber of Deputies has approved by 275-90 a bill giving Signor Mussolini emergency powers, or full dictatorial powers, as some are calling them. They're due to expire on December 31st next year, 1923. In Berlin, Wilhelm Kuno, the German businessman who is not a member of any political party, has taken office as the country's new chancellor, appointed by President Ebert, but without any vote in the Reichstag. But perhaps Germany's next rulers will be found elsewhere. Adolf Hitler, the talented public speaker who heads the National Socialist German Workers' Party, attracted an astonishing size of crowd to his rally in Munich, 50,000 people. He's making a splash overseas too. The New York Times has just published its very first article about Herr Hitler, seeking to explain his appeal to the German people. The paper acknowledges his virulently expressed hatred of the Jews, but is at pains to assure its readers that, quote, several reliable, well-informed sources confirm the idea that Hitler's anti-Semitism was not so genuine or violent as it sounded, and that he was merely using anti-Semitic propaganda as bait to catch masses of followers, unquote. So that's all right then.
Chinatown, my Chinatown, where the lights are low.
Hark, there's no, no of the land.
Of the land drifting to and fro.
There is no Chinatown like the Forbidden City in Peking. That is where Xuan Tong, the 17-year-old former emperor of China, has married the 16-year-old Gobolo Wanrong in an elaborate ceremony approved and arranged by the government despite the abolition of the monarchy. Following Manchu tradition, an enormous procession of palace guardsmen, court eunuchs and musicians carried the Princess Wanrong by moonlight in the red sedan Phoenix chair through the Forbidden City to the dragon throne where her master awaited. Later, as the marriage decree was read out, Wanrong kowtowed to Xuan Tong six times to symbolize her complete submission to her husband. In accordance with tradition, Wanrong wore a mask, a crimson satin cloth embroidered with a dragon and a phoenix, and completely covering her head. After the ceremony, the emperor, Wanrong, and his secondary consort, Wen Xiu, whom he married the same night, retired to the Palace of Earthly Tranquility, where everything is red, the Chinese color of love, and where emperors traditionally consummate their marriages. But there are rumors circulating in Peking that Puyi, as the emperor is known, is a shy young fellow and fled from the bridal chamber, leaving both his wives to sleep in the dragon bed by themselves. For over half a century, Great Britain has operated its own network of post offices in China in Amoy, Canton, Chefoo, Fuzhou, Hankou, Kyungchou, Ningpo, Shanghai, Suatow, and Tientsin. all had the authority to issue their own postage stamps, and the mail was then shipped to Hong Kong for forwarding to London and elsewhere. Now all the British post offices in China are to be closed. In London, just days after becoming the first socialist to serve as leader of His Majesty's loyal opposition, J.R. Clines is out, toppled by a disloyal Labour Party caucus and replaced by one of his party's founders, Mr. Ramsay MacDonald. Mr. Clines had been a bitter critic of what he regarded as Westminster's betrayal of the Irish. Ramsay MacDonald, of course, spent the war as a pacifist, which apparently is now more easily forgivable than a contrarian view of the Irish question.
Oh, that our out of Ireland let their happy feelings flow, like the old river channels flowing free.
On John Bull's other island, the Cork is well and truly out, as one group of Irish nationalists continues to execute the other group of Irish nationalists. Erskine Childers is well known to readers around the world as the author of the highly influential bestseller The Riddle of the Sands, but his political journey from British patriot to Irish Republican has not ended well for him. A military court of the incoming Irish Free State convicted him of unlawful possession of a firearm, and at 7 a.m. at the Beggar's Bush Barracks in Dublin, Mr. Childers was executed by firing squad. He ended his days among us with rare style and sang-froid, insisting on shaking hands with every one of his killers, and telling them as his final words, "Take a step forward, lads. It will be easier that way." Erskine Childers was 52. Will Eamon de Valera, self-styled president of the so-called Irish Republic, be next to face a firing squad? The new Irish Free State nearly had him. They sent their soldiers to arrest him, but though in the right street, they were in the wrong house. The tip-off had made a slight error in the street number. Mr. de Valera was at the home of Count Plunkett, the former member for Roscommon, but a crucial half hour passed before the mistake in the house number was realised. And like a shamrock-hued pimpernel, the wily de Valera was gone. The other Irish nationalists have now decided to return the favour and commence executing the first group of Irish nationalists. Liam Lynch, the Chief of Staff of the Irish Republican Army, has issued his so-called Orders of Frightfulness, authorising all IRA members to commence retaliatory assassination of officials of the Irish Free State. Mr. Lynch's order, titled the Enemy Murder Bill, declares that, quote, all members of the Provisional Parliament who were present and voted for the murder bill of Irish Republicans will be shot at sight. Houses of members who are known to support murder bill will be destroyed. Unquote. Irish Free State Army officers who approve of the bill will be shot on sight, as will all ex-British Army officers who have joined the Free State Army. London is sitting this one out. Whitehall has announced that the last few troops of the British Army stationed in the Empire's newest dominion will leave in the first weeks after the birth of the Irish Free State next month. The small number of soldiers still in Dublin will be withdrawn beginning on December 12th, and a detachment of troops near the Ulster border will leave on January 5th in the new year.
Way down yonder in New Orleans, in the land of dreamy scenes, there's a Garden of Eden.
That's what I need.
Three old babies with flashing eyes, softly whistle with tender sighs.
Stop.
Oh, won't you give your lady fair
a little smile. Stop.
You bet your life you'll linger there a little while.
There is heaven right here on earth with all beautiful queen. Way down yonder in
In the United States, way down yonder in New Orleans, Louisiana, defying stern and menacing warnings by his opponents in the Democrat Party, President Harding has nominated Walter Cohen a Negro Republican, to the office of Controller of Customs of the Port of New Orleans. In the South, those implacably opposed to Mr. Cohen charge that the president has broken the promise he made them not to appoint any Negro to a federal position. You will be relieved to hear that the bitter racial politics between Republicans and Democrats does not extend to all aspects of American public life. As you know, William Day, Secretary of State under the Republican President McKinley, recently stepped down from the U.S. Supreme Court. The Republican President Harding had been expected to nominate a Democrat judge, William Grubb, to replace him. Instead, he nominated a different Democrat, Pierce Butler, all very nonpartisan. Walter F. George has begun his tenure as Senator George of Georgia, but he waited 24 hours to be sworn in order to permit 87-year-old Rebecca Latimer Felton to make history as the very first woman to be an American senator, albeit just for one day. Senator Felton had no time to pass any legislation, but she did get to give a speech. Quote, "When the women of the country come in and sit with you, though there may be but a very few in the next few years, I pledge to you that you will get ability, you will get integrity of purpose, you will get patriotism, and you will get unstinted usefulness." South of the border, an angry mob has stormed City Hall in Mexico City and set it alight in protests over water rationing. Have you tried the water in Mexico City? Most Americans would be happy to have it rationed. But at least 17 people are dead in the riots.
Hello, Central. Give me no man's land. My daddy's there. My mama told me.
Hello, Central. Give me that telephone directory in the sky. Are you familiar with skywriting? As we have reported, it has been done in England, including at the Derby. But skywriting, the writing of messages in white smoke upon the blue of the sky, has come to the United States. Royal Air Force pilot Cyril Turner took to the skies above New York City and, flying at an altitude of 10,000 feet, wrote the words in giant letters, "Hello, USA," followed by the cryptic message, "Call Vanderbilt 7200. Vanderbilt 7200 is the telephone number for the Vanderbilt Hotel, which promptly received 47,000 phone calls in the next 3 hours.
And then he'd roll, roll, roll. Way up the river he would roll, roll, roll. A hunky dipper, then he'd kiss her now and then. She would tell him when. He'd pull around, and then they'd kiss again. And then he'd roll, roll, roll. A little further he would roll, oh, 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 oh. Then he'd drop both his oars, take a few more encores, and then he'd roll, roll, roll.
Do you like row, row, rowing? The new Colorado River Compact, signed in Santa Fe by the governors of seven states, may put a crimp in your oars. The upper basin states, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Wyoming, have pledged not to cause the flow of the river to be depleted below a specified level during any period of 10 consecutive years in order to ensure an adequate supply to the lower division states, Arizona, Nevada, and California. But the talk around the conference is that aside from anything else, the interstate compact will clear the way for the construction of a giant new dam on the Colorado. Terrible news from Dolomite, Alabama, about 9 miles north of Birmingham. A broken cable on the tipple, 200 yards above the mouth of the mine, caused three cars to plunge down the 1,100-foot slope and set off a dust explosion. 90 people are dead and hundreds more injured. Most of the dead are white men and most of the injured Negroes. There is anger in the community. Soldiers are already on the scene, and there is talk of martial law being imposed.
The girl I love is on the magazine cover. It seems they painted a gun for me. I'd fall in love if I could ever discover a little girl quite as nice as she. If I could meet a girl as sweet, I'd simply claim her and name her my queen. For if she ever came, I would love her the same as I love her on the cover of a magazine.
Will they have girls on the cover of our newest magazine? It seems unlikely, even though it is the creation of two 23-year-old Yale men, Mr. Henry Luce and Mr. Britton Haddon, who have incorporated a new company for the purpose of publishing a weekly news magazine starting early in the new year. The periodical will bear the same name as their company, Time. Did you like that first film in so-called Technicolor, The Gulf Between? Now there's a second one, The Toll of the Sea, starring Anna May Wong as a young Chinese girl, Lotus Flower, who finds an unconscious American floating in the water and falls in love with him. It's doing great business at the Rialto in New York. And don't miss Dr. Jack, no Technicolor, just Harold Lloyd on top form as a doctor who prefers not to prescribe unnecessary medicines and so makes less money than he otherwise would. It's shaping up to be one of the biggest comedy films of the year. Rudy Toot Toot Hot Dog, that's one of the many musical delights in Anne Caldwell, P.H. Burnside, and Jerome Kern's new musical comedy, The Bunch and Judy, at the Globe Theatre on Broadway. The plot is something to do with a great lady of the stage, played by Adele Astaire, who retires in order to sail to Britain and marry a Scottish laird. But don't bother yourself with any of that. It's Adele and her brother, Fred Astaire, who've got Broadway talking about The Great White Way's latest dynamite double act. Last week, we reported on the Canton Bulldogs' 7-0 victory over the Chicago Cardinals. In the second game of the two-game series at Canton, the Bulldogs again won, this time 20-3, to clinch the title in America's National Football League. Baron Sonnino served as Italian Prime Minister for two short spells, as is the way in that kingdom. The first in 1906, the second from 1909 to 1910. But he is perhaps better known to the rest of the world as Italy's representative at the 1919 Paris Peace Conference and as the first Prime Minister to fly in an aeroplane with Wilbur Wright himself in the cockpit. Baron Sonnino is dead of a stroke in Rome at 75. Renzo Novatori, the Italian philosopher and anarchist, has been shot dead in a police ambush in the city of Telia near Genoa. The Carabinieri found on his body a ring with a secret compartment containing a lethal dose of cyanide. He did not get to it in time. Signor Novatori was 32. James Mann is best known as the author of the White Slave Traffic Act of 1910, the so-called Mann Act, that makes it illegal to transport a woman across state lines for immoral purposes. A U.S. representative for Illinois since 1897, he is dead in Washington at 66 and will himself be transported across state lines for burial back in Chicago. Just a few weeks ago, earlier this month, when Samuel Marks was running for election in the 19th Congressional District of New York, many observers thought he seemed too unhealthy to serve in Washington, where federal office can be quite grueling. Nonetheless, he was duly elected. Mr. Marks will not, however, take his seat in the new year. Just 3 weeks after election, he is dead of heart failure at the age of 55. René Cresté was a director and star of the French cinema, best known for playing Judex in a series of hit pictures just 4 years ago. Judex, if you're wondering, was a mysterious cloaked Avenger with unique powers far beyond that of ordinary men. We find it hard to imagine such a preposterous concept catching on in Hollywood. Monsieur Cresté, alas, did not have sufficient extra-normal powers to see off tuberculosis. He is dead at 40. George Auger was a tall Welshman known to patrons of the Barnum and Bailey Circus as the Cardiff Giant. He stood 8 feet 4 inches tall and was on the brink of even bigger stardom on the silver screen after playing opposite Harold Lloyd in the new comedy picture Why Worry? He had more to worry about than he knew. The Cardiff Giant was stricken by indigestion while dining with friends in New York. He is dead at 40. And that's the way of the world, November 1922.
100 years from today, 100 years from today.
Do you enjoy the 100 Years Ago show? Well, we're doing it live on the 2023 Mark Stein Cruise and in a part of the world where 100 years ago there was more history happening than anybody needed. Italy, Croatia, Montenegro, Greece. Aside from the 100 Years Ago show, we'll be doing a Sunday poem, Song of the Week, Tales for Our Time, all your favourite Stein Online features, plus the Mark Stein Show with special guests from America, Canada, Britain, Australia, Europe. A week of Steiny on the Briny. Hope you'll want to join me. More details at steinonline.com and marksteincruise.com.
The 100 Years Ago Show is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and O'Kill Media, all rights reserved.